We good? The fourth reading of Parshas Beshalach, we're getting into the details now of the second half of Kriyas Yamsuf. So the first half is when the Jewish people see the sea split open and they walk on dry land safely. And now the Egyptians follow them and they will be destroyed. Chapter 14, verse 26, Vayemer Hashem al Moshe, God says to Moses, Netei es yadcha al hayam, raise your hand over the sea. Ve'yashuvu hamayim al Mitzrayim, the water will return to its normal state. It will come crashing down over the Egyptians. Al rikhbei ve'al parashav, on his cavalry and his chariots. Netei es yadcha al hayam. The Rush points out that here it doesn't say raise your staff, it says raise your hand. And because here, this final miracle of the Exodus did not happen through a staff. It happened through Moshe Rabbeinu himself. We know when the Jewish people finished crossing the Red Sea, they said, Vayaminu b'Hashem uve Moshe avdei. They believed in Hashem, in God, and Moses' servant. Ramban wants to suggest that the reason that they were davening, which is a statement, a declaration of faith, and then a moment later, they become faithless, and they say, with not enough graves in Egypt, one of Ramban's suggestions is they believed in God, but not Moses. So here, it was very clear that it was Moses who was acting on God's behalf, and therefore the faith should be placed by Yemina Ba'Hashem in God and in his servant Moshe Rabbeinu. The Ur Chaim says, Nateyas Yodcha means that it was a sudden fell swoop. Moshe Rabbeinu raised his hand, and the water came crashing down. It wasn't something that was slow, a slow process. And that's why nobody survived. It was impossible to foresee. It happened in a moment. Everything came crashing down. And that's why we're going to see L'nishra Adechot. Nobody was left. So when was this? Abarbanel says that there were still Jewish people, still Hebrews, slaves walking on dry land in the sea when behind them the waters were crashing down. Some who say it was only after they left the sea, but Abarbanel argues that that couldn't be the case, and there were still some people in the sea, and yet, behind them, the waters were crashing down. Okay, so let's take a look at Rashi now. Chavav, Rashi says, Vayashuvu hamoyim, the waters returned. The language Vayashuvu does not mean because the waters were already, so to speak, now down, and now they returned or glossed over or crashed over the Egyptians. But rather, Rashi says, Shezukufim ve'oimdim kechayma. The water at that point had been standing erect like a wall. And because the water, as it says multiple times, V'hamayim lehem chayma mi'yaminam mismaylam, the water was standing as a wall to the right and to the left. So Yeshuvu l'mekayimam, now the waters will return to their normal place. Waters do not pile up usually. Waters are, so to speak, churning over the ocean sea. And so the water now is no longer standing erect. The water comes back to its original place. V'yechasu al Mitzrayim, and it totally covers over Egypt. Verse 27. V'yet Moshe es yadei. God gives the command. Moshe does indeed raise his hand al hayom, over the sea. Vayoshov hayom lifneis beker. The water returns towards morning. Le'isonei, to its former strength. Umitzrayim nosim likrosi. In their state of confusion, the Egyptians are rushing towards the surging sea. Vayinar Hashem es Mitzrayim b'seich hayom. God churns the Egyptians into the sea. Rashi says, what is the meaning of lifneis beker? Lifneis beker means before daybreak. Just as day is breaking. In other words, the Jewish people went into the Red Sea at what we call the time of daybreak, or the time of the rise of the morning star, alois hashachar, when it's still very dark outside. And then, at a later point, day was breaking. As the sun was rising, it was dawn. And that's when this happened. Others maintain that that was not really possible to say that, because lifnei beker would have to be, you have several million Jews, They couldn't have gotten through this in a half hour. It would have taken time to get through the Reed Sea. So Lufnais Baker, according to the Chizkuni, is as day was beginning to turn into afternoon. Right, the sun rises and the sun is on an upward trajectory until it reaches the apogee, till high noon. And then it begins a downward descent. And that's called Bein Harbayin, and that's the afternoon. The afternoon begins when the moon reaches the sun reaches the apogee, and then it begins its descent down. Bein Harbayim is between the beginning of the sun's descent and then the setting of the sun. So this is Lefnais Baker, as morning is almost already reaching afternoon. That's how the Chizkuni puts it. So the sea returned Le'esonai. Rashi says Le'tokfai Harishin. Le'esonai means to its original strength. In other words, the sea was in a strange place. It wasn't moving. It congealed, and then it turned into like slabs of glass, like bricks of glass. And here, the waters came crashing down. Nosim likrasi. Rashi says, Shahayu muhumamim umiterofim. They were totally confused, they're disoriented. Verotzen likras hamoyim. You would think they should run away from the water, but in fact, they were rushing towards the water. Vayinar Hashem, God began to churn, ka'odom shemenayir hakdeira, like a person who stirs a pot. Hoifecha elyon lamata v'hatachta lamayla. Why do we stir pots? Besides that, we look for something to do. See a pot going, huh? To mix the pot. Why do you want to mix the pot? Because there's going to be a part of the soup that's in the bottom of the pot, which is close to the fire. A part of the soup is on top of the pot, which is far from the fire. In order for the heat to be equally distributed, what we do is we churn the, or we stir the pot. So here, God was churning the waters. What does that mean? It meant that those who were on top ended up on the bottom. Those on the bottom ended up on top. Hayo'ilin v'yerdin u'mishtabrim. The people were going from the depths of the sea all the way up to the crest of the wave and then back to the depths of the sea. And in mishtabrim, they were literally breaking apart b'yam in the sea. V'nosna kadosh baruch hu b'hem chios. God gave them strength. He gave them ability, wherewithal. Kabbalah Yisurim, they didn't die instantaneously, but rather all of the evil that they perpetrated during the course of their own lifetimes against the Hebrews was now repaid in grand measure, and they suffered plenty. By Yinayir, Rashi says, if you look in Onkelos, you'll see he says Vishanek. Vishanek is Lashen Tiruf, that comes from the word of mixing, or the idea of stirring. Bahar Beyesh B'Medesh Agada, there are many examples of this in the Medesh Agada where the word is used to describe the concept of stirring or churning. And so, as the Egyptians were churned in the water, and as they were disoriented, rushing towards the waters, the Sephorno says that the intention here is to the masses. He says, in fairness, the army was not only comprised of 600 chariots. 600 chariots, that was the choice vehicle, military vehicle of a day. That was like 600 tanks. That's a lot of tanks. But then there was also a cavalry. There was people on horse. And there was also foot soldiers. So the crowd was rushing through. The foot soldiers were rushing towards the water. Whereas the chariots who had been at the front of this attack were now coming back. And so basically they crashed into each other. And within all of this, the waters came crashing down and the churning began. Or Chaim says that also they had no time to get out. You can run when you're a little more agile by foot, but when you're in this heavy wagon, when you're in this like tank, you can't move. So they started to move, they tried to move, but it was like hopeless. And the churning and the speed of the water's return to its normal strength is what caught everybody by surprise. And in short, Vayashuvu Hamayim, as verse 28 tells us, the waters returned. Vayechasu es harechev es aparoshim. It totally covered over the cavalry. It covered over the chariots. Lechol chel pare, the entire army of the Pharaoh. Haboyim achareim bayom. Everybody who came after them into the sea. Lenishar bahem ad echot. There wasn't a single one left. Nobody was left. Rashi says, what is the meaning of Vayechas or Rechav, the Goymer? We talk about the details, the cavalry, the chariots, and then we say Lechol Chel Pare, the entire army of Pare. So what's Lechol? Rashi says, "Kach derech hamikrois lichtiv lamed yaseda." This is the methodology of the grammar. You, instead of saying kol chel, the entire army, it says lichol chel with a lamed. Kimol, for example, lachol kelov tasen achesus, which this refers to the instruments that were used on the mizbeach, and it says the mizbeach was covered with copper, and all the things that were used were also covered with, were made of copper. V'chein, similarly, lachol klea mishkan b'chol avedasei. Once again, a reference to the mishkan and its artifacts, and we say not kol klei, not all of the artifacts, not all of the utensils, but rather lichol. Or v'yaseidesam u'meiseseyam lachol kleihem. This once again is talking about mishkan-related artifacts. We're referring here to the pegs, the way that we kept the curtains tethered. And once again, it doesn't say kol, but rather it says lichol. Ve'enoi ela tikun lashon. This is just a grammatical thing. Don't read into what Rashi says. It's just grammatical.
Why would the Torah just have something grammatical?
Because the Torah is written in a language. And language has grammar.
So what is that grammatic difference?
That when you say everything was included, you use this royal flourish with a lamed in front. Lichol. To all. But you're not actually to, it's all about all. Everything was gone. So it's like in Hebrew, you say to everything was gone. Here's the point. If Rashi doesn't comment, you start thinking, there's a lamed. I wonder what the lamed's telling us. I wonder if there's some kind of secret message that's tucked into the folds of this word. And then you start looking. So Rashi says, no, don't look. It's not. There's no secret message here. This is what it says. This is just the way. This is merely a grammatical thing. Okay, it's grammar. It's grammar. It's grammar. So the waters cover everybody over. And le'nishar b'hem ad echad. Nobody's left. What does it mean, ad echad? So ad echad literally means nobody's left. But it also sounds like until one. And so the Zakenim, Mibalei HaTosfos, they said there was one left. Who was the one left? Exactly. The Pharaoh survived. He did see. There's actually a fascinating medrash that says that the son of Chum, Mitzrayim, was still alive. And he showed up at the Reed Sea and came to see what happened to his nation. And he was there too. So there were some spectators. But the Pharaoh was the only one who actually walked out of the sea. The only survivor. And so we conclude now this morning with verse 29. Going back now, the camera shifts back onto the Israelites. Uvnei Yisrael and the children of Israel. Holchu vayabosha b'sechayam. They walked on dry land right into the sea. V'hamayim lahem choyma. The water serves as a wall, miyaminam umismaylam, from the right and from the left. So we don't have any commentary from Rashi on this. It is what it is, as they say. That's what happened. The Egyptians were churned, covered over, destroyed, and the Israelites walked right through. No problems. So let's take a look now and see what the Mefarshim say about this business. Hamayim lahem chayma miyaminam umismaylam. It is already the second time that this is mentioned. Incidentally, it's going to be mentioned a third time at the end of the Shira. It's mentioned once at the beginning of the narrative of Kriyas Yamsuf, mentioned a second time right before the Shira, which is here, and then it's going to be mentioned a third time. So what's up with the chayma miyaminam umismaylam, the wall to the right and to the left? Here in the Biyuri Achumish, Peizesh Tzadik Dalad, we have a quote from the Yalkut Shemayni, Remez Reish Lamed Hei. And the Yalkut Shemayni says the following, Umi Goram Lahem Lihinotzel. Who caused them to be saved? So really the background you need to hear is that the alter ego of the sea and the spiritual force of Egypt came with a whole complaint to God. It said, you're destroying the Egyptians. The Jewish people walk away. They're not such big tzaddikim, you know. There are plenty of idolaters. There was an idolater walking in the sea. In fact, with regard to the words amayim lehem choyma, it's not spelled with a vav. It should have been spelled ches vav mem hey. But over here, where it says that the waters were for them a wall, it's actually spelled like the word chema, which means anger. Ches mem hey. And there is the idea which is talked about in the Gemara, which the Baal HaTurim identifies as encoded into the words, that God was filled with anger because of this lowlife Micha, who was busy carrying an idol, an Egyptian idol that he took with him. And he was singing praises to his idol as he walked through the Reed Sea. As God tore open the waters, and as the Jewish people saw divine revelation, he was busy praising his idol. So, mi garem lehem linatzel? What caused the Jewish people to be saved in this hour of need? And the answer is, mi yaminam u'mismaylam, from the right and from the left. Mi yaminam, from the right, bizuchus ha-teiro, shehen asidun likabel, in the merit of the Torah which they would yet receive. Shenemar, how do we know that the Torah metaphorizes or represents right? It's written, mi yaminai, eish das lomay, from his right side, a fiery law came. So therefore we know that the right represents Torah. Mismailam, the left. This has nothing to do with political orientation, just by the way. Mismailam, the left, zu tefillin. This is the mitzvah of tefillin, which in some ways represents all of the mitzvahs. You know, there's a pasuk that says, Nate nata yumina yubara shamayim. He took his right hand, he created heaven. Nata smayla yubara aretz. He took his left hand, and he created earth. What does this mean? For most people, the right hand is the stronger hand. Some people, the left hand is the stronger hand, and they're just in their right mind. Their left hand is their right hand. But God made us all off kilter with a stronger hand and a weaker hand. And there are multiple reasons for this, but from this pasuk we could see, since we metaphorize as God creating the world with his hands, and we say that Nata Yeminoi raised his right hand, the Bara Shamayim, Shamayim does not refer to outer space. It's not about astrophysics. What does Shamayim mean? It's a euphemism. It represents the concept of spirituality. So when it comes to spirituality, that's primary. That's where the strength is. That's where God puts his strength. The world, that's already the left hand, so to speak. And we know that the Torah was given from heaven, and since the Torah is a Torah is min hashamayim, Torah is from heaven. So then, which side would Torah be associated with? The right side. Mi yaminei eish das, and the Torah is nata yaminei ubara shamayim, raised his right, and he created heaven. Torah comes from heaven, so Torah and right come together. Conversely, the concept of a mitzvah and the idea of tefillin represent all the mitzvahs, like the Gemara in Kedushin and Daf Lamed Hey says that kol hukshu kol ha-teira kulu l'tefillin, the whole Torah is equal to the mitzvah of tefillin. So this refers to taking the physical, the mundane, the ordinary, the dense reality of the world, of Oretz, of Artzius, and making that a holy vessel for God. And how do we do that? How do we take the material world and make it a vessel for God? By harnessing it, channeling it, using it for a mitzvah. And that's what the tefillin represents. You took the piece of leather, you took the which comes from an animal, and you turn it into a holy artifact. Something, a davar shebekdusha. It's called tashmish kedusha. So this is the notion that Hashem says to the Jewish people, you know why you got saved? Mi yaminam u'mismaylam. You got saved because of the merit of Torah, which represents right, and the merit of mitzvahs, which represents left. So what does this mean? What does this mean? They have to that there was right and left. The Rebbe says, "Yesh lishal madua nizkiku bnei Yisrael l'shtei chaymes." Why did they need two walls, so to speak, or two zachiyah, two merits? She yogeinu aleihem, that should protect them. V'le yispika avuram zchus achas. What you're gonna say? Two is better than one. I'll tell you, three is better than two. When I start enumerating zchusim. They're also going to have a mezuzah. And you know they're also going to keep kosher. And they're also going to observe Shabbos. You have a whole litany of 613 reasons why God didn't destroy them. 613 mitzvahs are going to get done. And the Torah doesn't say it. It's the yaminei, smile it. Right and left. That's all you get. Why do you need right and left? Why can't you say, bizchus ha-Torah, that's pretty good. In the merit of Torah. That's big. Ve'yesh leimar. So the Rebbe suggests bebira inyan kishodom eved es habeda bekav echad, when a person expresses his or her love and loyalty to God, but in a single dimensional way, in a one directional approach, b'derech achas bovad ein ladas, it's really very hard. In fact, it's impossible to know im avoda zu mevata his masrus labeda, if this is true love and loyalty, if this is true commitment. Why? Because the person may like to do this. Maybe he's doing this because this is perfect mode of self-expression. Some people like to be morose. Some people like to be inwardly focused. They like to be restrained. They like that. They're happy when they're doing that. They don't like to be exuberant and boisterous and engaging. They're like left-oriented people. And some people, they just look for action. You want Yiddishkeit? Shoin, Yiddishkeit action. It's like the boy in yeshiva never learns a Jewish word, but he's happy to make a farbrengen. Why? What do you want to have a farbrengen for? It's supposed to be a serious thing, a farbrengen. Yeah, he wants action. Action, that's it. Use it. Action, sign me up. That's what he wants. The other guy, he's not a bad guy. He likes to study. If he wouldn't be Jewish, if he would be Greek, he'd be studying Aristotle. If he was Chinese, he'd be studying Confucius. He doesn't care. He's a bookworm. That's his nature. It happens to be. He's holding a Gemara in his hands. Why? Why? Because he's from a Jewish family. He's learning Gemara. He learns Gemara. So the truth is that people have certain, let's call it self-expression. The self-expression you're comfortable with. And if you see a person who kind of moves in a single direction in his or her Avodas Hashem, so then Shema Huaisa Shum Shu Nimshach. That's what attracts them, that's what they're drawn. This matches, this fits their natural inclination. Rak. Only. When a person is serving God in two directional ways, he's not serving God in one direction. He's serving God in two directions, which means he's doing things which are intrinsically, organically speaking, contradictory. One is an act of engagement, one is an act of withdrawal, and he is withdrawing and engaging at once. When you see a person doing that, so then you can't say, oh, that's his nature. Unless he's bipolar. That's not normal. Normal is the people have certain things they like. If your person has multiple hobbies, invariably all the hobbies are going to have a commonality between them. Either they're hobbies which are right-oriented or hobbies which are, so to speak, left-oriented. Here we see a person serving Hashem. He's serving Hashem in a right-oriented way and in a left-oriented way. He is an activist, he's engaging with the world around him, and at the same time, he removes himself from the world around him, and he focuses exclusively on the study of Torah, on elevating his consciousness. So you say, what is this person looking for? Is this person looking to get into a higher headspace, or this person is looking to be more emotionally engaged with his or her environment? What's going on here? And when we see these both directions happening at the same time in Avodas Hashem, this is the greatest and clearest proof. As nitin lahichiach, this represents a clear cut reality. Shemedubur b'avodas Hashem amitis. This is not a person who is doing what he or she likes to do. This is a person who's doing what they feel they must do. This is an act of homage. It's an act of commitment. This is nevas mihis batlus klapi abeira mihis masnus muchletas elov. This comes because he loves Hashem. That's why it comes. So the husband is always ready to take his wife out for dinner because he likes going to dinner. He doesn't love his wife, he likes going to dinner. Or the husband who's very happy to do some chores in the house. Our husband's like that. He doesn't want to go out for dinner. He likes being, he's a homeboy, he likes being home. He likes doing, puttering around in the house. So then you say, is he really doing it for his spouse? No, he's doing it for him. It's what he likes. So if a Yid is serving Hashem in one direction, we say, okay, they're serving Hashem, but it's not an act of loyalty, it's an act of self-expression. In order to merit the splitting of the Reed Sea, we needed to make a step forward. We needed to demonstrate to God that we were absolutely committed. Therefore, there needs to be not one, but two. And not just any two. Not two in the same direction, but miyaminam umismoilam, two which go in different directions. And when we did that, the zuchus ha-Torah, which was kaviyamin, the study of Torah, which represents the right dimension, the zuchus the tefillin, representing mitzvahs, which is kavasmoil, representing the left dimension, shahuch ha-chichu sh'bnei Yisrael achin igiyu le'izbatlos, this was the proof that the Jewish people, the Hebrew slaves, had risen above the fray, and at this point, they were committed. When they were committed, Hashem saved them. That's so the answer is bizchus in the merit of what were they saved. And what's the answer? Commitment. Commitment. How do we know they were committed? Miyaminam umismoilam. When you have both directions going on, this is the clearest proof that we have a situation of real love, of real loyalty, of real devotion, and of real commitment. And when we express ourselves that way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we are really committed to the Almighty, in turn, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides for and takes care of us. So it was, and so it will be. Yeah.